Session number 1726, Thomas Lawton, Reel 1.
Mr. Lawton, Reel 1. When and where were you born, Mr. Lawton?
I was born in Burnley on the 15th of July, 1906.
What did your father do?
My father was a colliery winding engineman at the Euston Hay Colliery, which I could see from here if it still stood there, but it's gone now.
Brothers and sisters?
Yes. I had four brothers. Two died in infancy. I had four sisters. That's it. There was a family of eight. Four brothers, four sisters. All died, of course, by now.
Was life tough?
Not really. Not in the beginning. My father was favoured by the colliery agent, a man called Mr. Cocum, who lived in Leafield House. He was practically the squire of this village. Everybody raised the hat to him, or they plucked the forelock. And my father had permission to have a house shop. We lived in a little place called Newtown, just at the south of Burnley. The only nine streets. My father had a house shop, and I can remember as a kid looking in the back window of that shop and admiring the coconut haystacks and the pack of chocolates and the caramels and so forth, see? But you see, my father was also a Freemason, as was the colliery agent. That could have something to do with it. Nevertheless, he had a responsible job as a colliery winding engineman. Never missed a shift, wouldn't miss a shift. But he would work extra time if he got the chance. And at that time, there'd be my mother, my oldest brother, my oldest sister, my second oldest sister, and my youngest brother, my youngest sister wouldn't be there then. But I would say we were a pretty happy family. And an interesting thing is that many years later, I learned from my mother that that was a little gold mine. In the days when gold sovereigns were, you know, she reckons that on a Sunday, from 10 o'clock in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, they could take 10 or 12 pounds. And the average wage at that time was 38 shillings and £2. So, my father decided to become a publican. And we moved into a place called Portobello, which is just up the road from here. And this is an interesting thing, Harry. We have Vigo or Vigo. We have Portobello. We have Havana. We have Washington, we have New York, all in the area. So we moved to Portobello, into a little pub called the Board Inn. Today it's quite a going concern.
What date would this be?
Well, that would be about 1910. 1910, I started school from Portobello. That's fair enough, 1911. I was born in 1906. 5-year-old, 1911, moved 1910 to Portobello. And I have very happy memories of Portobello. Snow, especially snow. The board outside, the cellar board, was my battleship. I was always fighting. Or it was a pirate ship, or it was a stagecoach, and I had a little cannon that fired a cork, you know, on a string. My father walked from Portobello down to the pit, back again every day. When we started school, we walked from Portobello to Burtley, at least a mile, to school. We walked back again for dinner at 12 o'clock, back again for school at 1:30, then back again at night at 4 o'clock.
Before we come to your school life, which we will do, was your father in the forces at any time?
No. He wasn't. but he was a very military man. In our house, on the walls where I've got these photos of General Buller, Lord Kitchener, General Methuen and White, all Boer War men. My father was really militarily minded, but he was never a soldier. He was a strong man, and when we spoke to him, we said, yes, father, no, father. We didn't stand strictly to attention, but when he spoke to us, he had a habit of saying, Tom, tell me, or Tom, or tell me, Tom. It made a difference. Tom, tell me, or tell me, Tom. There was a big difference in that. And whenever I answered my father, we all did the same. We said, yes, father, no, father. And at the end of the mantel shelf, there was the cat o' nine tails, what we called tears. Never used, but they were there for use if necessary. I never remember being struck by my father, but he did strike my brother, my younger brother, on the backside, because Steve had put a raw egg in his pocket. And my father was so annoyed, he hit him, get off, lad, and he smacked him on the backside, which smashed the egg, you see, which ran down his legs. Well, that caused a lot of fun. No.
Did your mother work?
No, no. My mother was a housewife when we had the shop, and also a housewife when we had the pub, although we had a barman in. And, of course, we had a pony, and we had a trap, a tub trap, and we had a gig, which, of course, is a higher kind of trap. The pony's name, Bobby. Never forget Bobby. We also had some people called Lawton, no relation whatsoever, lived right opposite the pub. Susanna, and she was my auntie Susanna, and he was my uncle Fred. He wasn't as big as a pint pot. He had three sons, and the four of them worked at Kosher Colliery. And Kosher Colliery was known as Scotia, New Scotia, because of the number of Scottish miners who came down from Scotland to find better conditions in England, and they worked at Kosher Colliery. And my auntie Susanna, she had to draw the water from a communal tap, carry it into the house, pour it into a big cast iron pan, which a normal man couldn't lift empty, boil the water, and she had what we used to call then a tin pot. It was like a big pint pot, but it was made of tin. And when they came in from work, black, from the pit, they got bathed in seniority. Fred, the father, in front of the fire, in a tin or zinc bath, just his hoggers on, just left his pit hoggers on.
That's a small shorts.
Just his shorts. And they each took their turn, if they came in at the same time, as which they usually did. And as one got finished, Auntie Susanna would take the tin pot and scoop two or three tin pots of water out, and then with the same tin pot, get into the boiling water and put boiling water in, see? And each of those men carried on their back a shield, a black shield, polished black shield. So polished, they could lie on clean sheets and it wouldn't come off. Because, you see, it was a well-known fact among pitmen, never wash your back, you'll weaken it, and you need a strong back for the pits. So they never did wash their backs. And of course, this rebounded many, many years later when the National Coal Board took over and introduced pithead baths. They couldn't drive the men under the showers. But anyway, my Uncle Fred and the family, it was a known fact then that every woman saw their men folk out to work. And they saw their men folk in from work. Because they never knew the day when any of those men were going to come home in the dead box. And the dead box was just a box on wheels, and the body was put in there. And I've even seen water still running out the dead box from a man who had probably drowned in the pit. And so it was a regular thing, see, the dead box. Now, we had a pub, and we used to keep what they called the dead boards. Dead boards, yes. They were a flat board, shaped like a coffin, and there were trestles there, And when anybody died, they came in and borrowed the dead boards. Because it was customary on the day of the funeral to stand the coffin outside on the boards, on the trestle, and everybody to stand round and sing hymns. And then they all fell in like soldiers, and they followed the coffin to the graveyard. And the worst funeral I ever went to was at an Uncle Bill who died within a half an hour of my father. He died half an hour before my father, so he was due to be buried before my father, who was buried next year. And we walked from Burton to a place called the Winning Colliery, 5 miles up those fields, over those fields, along dirt tracks. There was a hearse with a coffin in. There were 2 mourning coaches with a near family, and the rest of us walked behind, went 5 miles there. We walked 5 miles back to the graveyard. We went 5 miles back for tea. We did 20 miles in one day paying the honours at a funeral. So we kept these dead boards. Now at Portobello at that time, there was a mischievous sprite. A mischievous sprite, yes. And they called it the Portobello Brag, spelled B-R-A-A-G. Said to be of Norwegian extraction. And this sprite used to roam the fells, the black fells of Portobello. Ah. And the people of Portobello, when they talked about it, it was a daily topic, they spoke very quietly about it. Because they never knew who was the brag. What was the brag? It could change its... For instance, old Granny Bland bought a leg of mutton from the butcher's cart, which used to come round, and she hung it in the pantry. It wasn't there next year. Now, nobody would accuse anybody of stealing that, because it was a small community, and that could cause a lot of trouble. So they said, it'd be the brag. But it's been the brag that Granny Bland bought, disguised as a leg of mutton. Right? So this brag used to roam the fells. And one of its favourite disguises was to appear in the shape of a donkey, a white donkey, in the moonlight. You see, people used to walk all the way from Houghton and Sunderland across the fells, even to get Low Fell. And so you can imagine a weary wayfarer, dead beat, knows he's got another 4 or 5 miles to go. He's wandered across the fells for a couple of hours, and suddenly, in the moonlight, he espies a white donkey standing just chewing the grass. In those days, everybody knew how to handle a horse or a donkey. So, not believing his eyes, he moves towards the donkey, but it never moves. He gets his hand onto its head, runs it down its back, over its haunches, and the donkey just continues chewing. And then he climbs on his back. And when he gets on his back, the warmth of the donkey, and he eases it away with his knees, and the donkey moves away. And as it walks, of course, he's got a swaying motion, and he's gradually being rocked asleep. He's so happy, snooping away on the broad back of a donkey, until lo and behold, the donkey does a bug jump, throws him into the air, and he comes down face first into the biggest bed of stingingest nettles you could ever wish. And then the donkey just hee-hawed and ran away. But there was one thing. If you were related to a witch, or had a witch in the family anyway, that donkey would never trouble you. And this was proved, that the landlady of the Black Horse pub on Kells Lane in Low Fell was a witch. Simply because her man had walked all the way from Houghton on his way to Low Fell, coming across the moors, dead beat, and he espied this white donkey. So he went towards the donkey, smoothed it, soothed it, got on its back. He didn't even have to move it. It moved away, and it moved in the direction of Low Fell. And it carried him all the way to Low Fell, to the Black Horse pub, and it got on its haunches and slid him off its back. He was asleep. And he was lying at the door of his wife's pub, which proved that his wife was a witch.
So the community were very superstitious?
Yes.
What was the community like, living in a close in a community like that?
Rather nice, but there was always tittle-tattle. And that's why I say, you see, nobody would accuse anybody of stealing anything because you were hitting, the whole family hitting the village. The brag, blame anything but the people. But some lovely people, everybody's door was your door, and everybody's house was your house. And there was a chap there, he was a gamekeeper, he was a poacher, called him Jocker Little. I love Jocker Little. Jocker Little had a lovely garden with gooseberry bushes in, and he had a stable. And our little pony Bobby was stabled there. And Jocker used to have a stick gun, a gun made from a walking stick. I used to go poach on Lord Lambton's estate. I loved him. And there was another old fella, old Philip Goodfella. And Goodfella must have been a very popular name because I think the whole of the village were Goodfellas, unless the milkman came more than often. Anyhow, old Philip, we used to call him a stuffer of birds. Taxidermist, of course. But we didn't know it was taxidermist without that was somebody who drove a taxi. Nevertheless, Philip, he had all manner of birds in his house, stuffed, which he himself had caught and killed and stuffed. Beautiful all over the place. And so he had these people who were very clever people, very simple people, honest to a point, right? But always ready to play a trick on somebody. Now, for instance, there was a man called the Starving Barber. He had a barber shop, but he never used it because nobody wanted to do it. And he used to carry his kit in a little yellow satchel. He's coming to my father's house on a Sunday morning, a glass of beer, and he'd be there for a couple of hours, eating meat pies. Because at that time, it was customary, there were pork pies or meat pies on the counter in the bar, but in the sitting room in the snug salmon sandwiches, or posh, right? And the Starving Barber, old Wilkie, used to come in, get a glass of beer, we'd sit there and eat about half a dozen pies, see? So my father and my uncle Tommy, who was a conjurer, he was a pitman, but he was a conjurer, and he said, do turns on the stage, you know? Cut a story short, he went to live in Australia with his son and his wife, and they carried him off the boat. A little thing called the queer fella killed him. That's a little story, the queer fella. Anyhow, the village itself was rather small. The people themselves were very clannish. All pitmen, with the exception of two who had a farm. And in Geordie Goodfella's field, we called it a humpty-backed field because it had a hill in the middle. And, of course, there were Methodists. The Methodist chapel was there. See? There was Roman Catholics used to come down to Burley, but the Methodists. And I used to go to the Methodist chapel. Although I'm a Catholic, though, I used to go to the Methodist chapel. And we used to learn our ABCs there. We used to learn how to add, take away, and divide. Eh? Alphabet, yes. But every year, on anniversary day, we lined up like little soldiers, about 25 of us, with our little pots, you know, and our spoons, and we marched up the Geordie Goodfellas field about 50 yards away, and we played on the Humpty Back field, and we booed our eggs down there at Easter time, and everything was, it was all there, in a little circle, down, goose. Everybody was superstitious. And if a kiddie was bad, he used to say, you behave yourself or you'll go to the cork hole. And the cork hole meant the grave. It comes from the Scottish kirk for church, where the cork hole was the grave. If a kiddie was bad, behave yourself or you'll go to the cork hole. And then that cork hole was all manner of nasty things, you see. And one of our favourite pastimes was to sit in what we called the box room. I don't know why it was called the box room in the pub. Big open fireplace, with a live fire on. Somebody telling ghost stories. And the only light there was the flickering from the fire. And we used to look around expecting ghosts or skeletons in the corners, you see. And life seemed to it seemed to circle around death, life and death. When the dead box came to anybody's door, it was just a matter of fact. He'd either been drowned, or he'd been crushed, or he'd been gassed, or anything happened. And he came there with two men pushing the dead box. Right? So I would think that life and death were the whole thing in that community.
What are your memories of starting school?
Big one?
You were five when you started school.
Yes.
What was the name of the school?
Well, no. I'm pleased you asked that question. My mother told me later on, she took us to school. I can even remember the headmistress's name, Miss Anderson. Wonderful woman. I can remember the name of my first teacher, the most beautiful woman I ever saw, Miss Dodds. I, and about 60 or 70 years later, there's an old woman passing my garden one day, and she says, hello. And I said, hello. We got on talking. She says, you've just moved in here. That was when I was living in Hooded Terrace. Yes. I says, excuse me, should I know you? You did know me a long time ago. She says, you're Tommy Lawton, aren't you? I said, yes. She says, do you remember Miss Dodds? Miss Dodds, my first teacher, the most beautiful woman ever saw. Here she was, 60 or 70 year old, and she still knew me. And she more or less introduced herself that way. But in that classroom, there was a great big picture above the open fire. Around the open fire, there was a rail, and we used to hang our clothes on there in winter time, you know. And that was a snow scene. A nice big snowman with a broom in his hand and a pipe in his mouth, and kiddies playing snowballs. And I've always thought that that scene had something to do with my liking for snow, because snow always brought that back to me. Anyhow, my mother reckons that I screamed when she left me, and when she got back home a mile away, she could still hear us screaming. I found school life quite pleasant. I always seemed to be able to, I wouldn't say I was a teacher's favourite, but somehow there must have been something, because we always got on with the teachers.
After your, that would be an, was it an all-age school or an infant school?
That was the infant school.
Where did you move to next in your schooling? Where did you go to next school?
Same place, but a higher standard. So you went into what they call the big school. Standard 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 and X 7. And you started segregated from the girls. The infants were in a yard by them, unsurfaced, in among the muck. The girls in there, the boys in here, the infants in there. And we went to school, this is what happened. Got to go at 9 o'clock, but you had to be there. Playing in the yard, and some of the teachers would come out into that yard, some into that yard with the headmaster, and they'd blow a whistle. And no matter what you were doing, you stopped. If you bent, you stopped. The second whistle, you stood up and you looked towards where they were standing. Third whistle, you ran and you fell in ranks. And on the third whistle, the class which was due to lead away, because all got their turns, led away into there. Then we had assembly. And an interesting thing about this, Empire Day. On Empire Day, we used to assemble and we used to sing that hymn, God of our fathers known of old, God of the far-flung battle lion, beneath whose powerful hands we hold dominion over palm and pine, Lord God of hosts, be with us yet, lest we forget. We used to come out, march round the schoolyard with a little penny union flag. Those in their bare feet, and there was plenty of them, were excused marching round in the muck, So they stood on the side, and we all sang Land of Hope and Glory. And all the time, you see, there was this patriotism. Where's God, I don't know, but everybody was patriotic. Just a little flag, nearly salute a little flag. And so I went through Standard 1, Standard 2, Standard 3, Standard 4. When I got to Standard 5, the war was raging, the 1914-18 war. And, of course, the soldiers were occupying a lot of the schools, so there was an overflow. And Standard 6, 7 and X7 moved down to the Primitive Methodist Chapel into a room there under the tutelage of Mr. Dunn, who was just discharged from the army, wounded. And he's the best wielder of the cane anybody ever met. And, of course, the interesting thing is, I left school from there in 1920. One July Friday at 4 p.m., I left school for the last time. And the following Monday morning, at 4:30, I left my father's house for the first time to walk 3 miles across fields and along wagon ways to start at 6 o'clock on the surface of a colliery. And do you know, the 1926 strike, the majority of men that were out of work went to sign on the door at the very classroom, the very room where they'd gone to school as guineas.
What did you think of the education that you got at the school?
Well, my trouble with education at school was they didn't seem to tell us enough. It's hard to explain. For instance, I was good at drawing. I was good with geography. But I was a bit thick with sums, as we called it, see? And I realized later in life, the trouble was, it was never explained. We were shown it, we were told about it, but it wasn't explained. Well, I think today, they explain the thing more. I don't know for sure, but I would think they do. But I used to love school. There was always something happening at school. And you had your rough lads, you had your bad lads, came in their bare feet. They'd been feeding the pigs on the morning, the stunk of pig meat. And Mr. Dunn used to sort them out and stick them up the back out the road. They never even got looked at. Right? But there's one lad there, Joe Mahone, he went through the war. Very good soldier, Joe Mahone. But as a school lad, he was a proper menace. He was a bully. And he used to get 6 on the hand regular, each hand. Who they got? 6 swishes. And he used to stick his hands underneath his armpits. And one day he says, "I'll bring me father down to ye." And Mr. Dunn says, "You what? I'll bring me father down to ye." "Right," he says, "don't you forget that if you don't bring your father down, you'll get another 6 on each hand." We went back into school after being for what, dinner. Aye, and sure enough, the class is there. And there was 2 steps up from the class outside, to go outside into the corridor. Knock at the door. Mr. Dunn got down off his desk, went up the steps and opened the door. And there was a fist hit him right in the chest, knocked him on the floor. And Joe Mahone's father, Bill Mahone, he was a pitman, and had a big moustache. And he looked in and he said to Mr. Dunn, lying on the floor, "And you hit my lad again, and they'll get mad of that." And he went away. Oh, we thought, hello, what's going to happen here? Mr. Dunn got up, dusted himself down, got onto his desk, sat on his high desk. He looked round, he says, "Mahone, I like a man of his word. I like anyone who says they're going to do a thing and they do it." "Oh." He says, "Yes." Well, he says, "You see what happened?" He says, "As far as I'm concerned, you did the right thing. And your father probably thought he was doing the right thing, but he didn't. He shouldn't have done that. Nevertheless, Joe Mahone became one of the nicest lads We used the road to get the teacher's bicycle. He could never get there for sure. He was clean. And Mr. Doane, probably through his army experience and that, could see both sides. And in actual fact, unintentionally, he converted Joe Mahone from a rough bully into a nice lad.